You're listening to The Critical Point on aerogel.org. I'm your host, Steven Steiner. As part of our ongoing series, The People Who Reinvented Aerogel, it is my distinct pleasure to be sitting down with Professor Nicholas Leventis from the Missouri University of Science and Technology in Rolla, Missouri. Nick is best known for his work in the creation of what are now called X-aerogels, a class of materials which are remarkably robust mechanically and, in fact, flexible, unlike the traditional aerogel materials that we typically think of. Nick, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
So first of all, one can't help noticing your accent. Where are you from?
Originally from Greece. Been on this side of the pond for 28 years, but you never get rid of the accent.
Where did you study?
I went to attend university in Athens and then came here for graduate school. I went to Michigan State. That's where I got my doctorate. And then I did, I completed, you might say, my formal education by doing postdoc at MIT with Mark Wrighton.
A good place.
Yeah. You know.
How did you get into aerogel?
About 10 years ago, I spent when I was still an assistant professor at what is now known as Missouri University of Science and Technology, I did a mini sabbatical in Deborah Rollinson's lab in the summer of 98, actually, exactly 10 years ago.
And, at the Naval Research Lab.
Naval Research Lab, that's right, yeah. And since then, you know, I just had in my mind aerogels. When I went back to Missouri, I did not just jump-start doing aerogels, but I had been impressed by these materials and by their fragility. So it became like an obsession that if we come up with some good idea, you know, to improve the strength, then we will apply it.
We got
to
figure that problem out, yeah. And so you did figure that problem out.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is obvious, you know, when you deal with aerogels, you know, that you look them the wrong way, like Bruce Dunn said once, and they fall apart, you know, so.
Exactly. Yeah. So how did you come up, why don't you first of all tell us about the X-aerogel technology platform and how it works? How do you make a brittle aerogel into a robust, flexible aerogel?
Yeah, you use the surface functionality on the skeletal network of an aerogel in order to attach a polymer. Actually a monomer that polymerizes right there in situ on the surface. So you form like a glazing, if you wish, on the skeletal network, and that glazing makes the weak points, which are the next between the particles, let's say, stronger, wider, bridged by molecules. So you add strength that way, so the entire structure for a small increase in density, the strength increases by a lot.
Significantly. And most astonishingly in the pictures that people will see of X aerogels, you can bend them, and you could never, ever do that with a typical silk aerogel. It simply breaks.
I mean, it takes a lot of force to bend them, of course, you know. Yeah, but you can bend them. And up to a certain point, they are an elastic deformation, so they recover. After a certain point, it's plastic deformation, and they remain bent. But you have to apply a lot of force to do that.
So one of the neat things about the technology, as I understand it, is that it doesn't just apply to silica, but to all of the metal oxides and to even organic aerogels as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we have made about 30 different element aerogels.
The entire lanthanide oxide series.
For example, yeah. And then we have been able to cross-link them the same way like with silica, and yes, you get robust materials again. You see different elements, they have different properties like luminescent properties, magnetic properties.
Oh, sure.
So we thought, you know, in the backbone to build some kind of additional properties so you have a multifunctional material in another direction, you might say. So it's strong and good thermal insulator, at the same time it's magnetic. Now, what that's good for, I don't know, but, you know, might somebody sees that and thinks of some kind of an application.
That's exactly what I need. There you
right,
go.
Right, exactly. And in the back of our mind, it was always, you know, the idea that perhaps by changing the element, then we're going to get a different network morphology, perhaps, so the mechanical properties will be also different. And actually, we strike gold in that, you might say, with vanadium.
That's right.
That instead of being particulate, it's a worm-like structure.
The unusual worm-like morphology.
Yeah, and it remains ductile, you know, whatever, even at cryogenic temperatures, which is like unheard of for for plastics, you know.
And I think that material, if I have my numbers right, has a higher specific strength than carbon fiber composite even, isn't that right?
Perhaps. I don't remember the numbers, Steve, you know, but definitely it has multiple times, about four times higher the specific energy absorption capability of carbon nitride ceramics.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah. So it can be used for armor, definitely.
Are there drawbacks to the X-Aerogel techniques?
Sure. Actually, the best aerogels we're doing now, which are templated, and they have like made out of templated silica, so you're using an inexpensive starting material. You might say you start from white, you end up with white. So opaque to opaque, so you don't lose any transparency. From some other types, yes, you lose transparency, you might say.
Okay.
Well, I mean, the biggest advantage right now is the mechanical strength, and that opens up a whole range of applications that were not possible with aerogels before, and in some aspects they're better than other porous materials. But one issue that has to be resolved before you see those materials being applied everywhere is manufacturing cost. Right now, I mean, it's a laboratory process. It goes with the washings, you know, solvent exchanges, all those
things. They
take
time.
Exactly.
Expensive.
So that's where we're working basically now, not trying another polymer or another backbone and another metal or whatever, you know, but just how to make the process more time efficient. One step, one pot.
So what's the nature of these polymers that you use to reinforce the aerogels?
Oh, several polymers have been used, you know, like polyureas, polyurethanes, epoxides, polystyrene, PMMA, plexiglass type of. So
basically the whole gambit of organic polymers you can use to reinforce.
You can think about it, you know, this way.
Inorganic aerogels.
We have not tried everything, of course, you know, but yes.
Very cool. Very cool. So where do you see the applications for X-Aerogels immediately? You mentioned armor for X-Vanadia.
That's the immediate one, I think. I think that the technology actually is in need of what I call killer application. Because armor, yeah, it's cool, but you're going to replace something else. You need to generate, you know, marketing space in a way.
A solution looking for a problem. What do we do with this stuff?
Yes.
And so
it's a good solution now, you know, I think, because it's like a strong lightweight material looking for a suitable problem.
And
if you have some ideas, let me know. You know.
I definitely will.
Yeah.
Certainly, the opportunities for using aerogels as structural materials were extremely limited in the past, and now it seems that the sky's the limit. We can actually use these things to build things that can bear load and can be used to make stuff like maybe even trucks or refrigerated
houses,
vehicles,
you know,
lighter, more efficient.
That would have been definitely a killer application if you can make construction materials out of it, because many houses, many buildings that have been built around the world per year, and if you make something for that market, then definitely you have a very good application.
Do you have to supercritically dry the materials to get optimal properties?
No, actually you don't. They're strong enough that they can take the surface tension forces.
Oh, that's an extremely...
Yeah. So you can dry them directly from the solvent you make them, like acetone acetone nitrile.
What a great side effect, that by actually strengthening the gels, they're strong enough to withstand the capillary stresses of evaporating the liquid out.
Yeah.
What else is going on in the Leventis group that's exciting? I heard that you have a new Holy Grail accomplishment as of last month.
Yeah, last summer, you know, I was out of the lab, you know, and when I'm out of the lab, students, they work more efficiently. In a way, they put their mind to work.
Are you saying you're a micromanager?
Well, not really, you know, but, you know, and we're trying to make a resorption of formaldehyde and iron aerogels in order to pyrolyze and make eventually carbon aerogels decorated with iron oxide. But eventually what we found out is that the good old smelting process by which the human civilization about 3,000 years ago moved from the Bronze Age to the Iron Age applies in the world of nanoparticles of the aerogels.
So
resorption of formaldehyde was turning to carbon. Carbon was reducing iron oxide, so eventually carbon became carbon dioxide, I presume, and iron oxide became iron. So we ended up with iron aerogel.
So let me get this straight.
Porous, high surface area, you know, iron, piece of iron, you know, like monolithic, you know, iron aerogel.
So to get this straight, because this is a big deal, you made a hybrid organic-inorganic aerogel which combined a typical resorcinol formaldehyde organic polymer with iron oxide into a single matrix, and then when you smelted it effectively...
When you heat it up, in other words, under
you heat it up, it auto-smelts.
Yes.
And leaves behind an iron metal aerogel.
Yes.
So you do realize that you have discovered the first metal aerogel.
I couldn't really discover, you know, smelting. As we said, you know, I mean, 3,000 years ago, people, they did that.
Well, sure, but they weren't smelting aerogels.
They weren't smelting, you know, nanoparticles. They were smelting, you know, yes.
I must give you my congratulations, because this is sort of the last frontier of materials which had yet to be rendered into aerogel form, and now we have a synthetic pathway.
It's appreciated, you know, coming from a friend, you know, yes, definitely.
So what else are, what other kind of metal aerogels can we make?
We're working right now successfully, actually, with tin and copper and a couple of other metals.
Very good. I would suspect nickel would probably work well.
Nickel and cobalt, you know, yeah, they're all within, ruthenium perhaps also, you know.
Absolutely tremendous. What do you see as the applications for these materials?
Okay, iron. Iron, as we know, is a catalyst. I mean, it's being used in the Haber process.
Is the iron aerogel magnetic?
Yes, it is.
That's absolutely cool.
Oh, this is very interesting, you know. Yeah, the iron aerogel made from native resorcinol formaldehyde iron oxide, it is ferromagnetic. If you cross-link the mixed RF iron oxide aerogel, then you end up with a macroporous material, and it is super paramagnetic.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know.
Very strange.
Yeah.
So a morphology difference, chemical difference?
The morphology difference.
Interesting.
Slight chemical difference. The one is like pure iron, the other one has a small amount of... you see, the actual chemical composition, when you say iron aerogel, is like pig iron.
Sure, it's got carbon in it.
It has a small amount of carbon.
Like
just
steel.
Like the smelting process, yeah. You know, like pig iron, you know, people that were making, you know, in the Iron Age, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, with about 5%, you know, 4%, 5% carbon.
Very exciting. So what about electrochemical applications? These could be used for high surface area electrodes, perhaps?
No, as I was saying, you know, I mean, like, iron is being used as a catalyst.
Sure.
Haber process.
That's right.
Fixation, you know, makes fixation of nitrogen, making ammonia.
Making ammonia.
Fischer-Tropsch.
That's right.
Is using iron with some other metals, you know, but iron is the base catalyst for the Fischer-Tropsch. Iron is being used for making carbon nanotubes, right?
That's right.
So... I think in catalysis, in the combination of high surface area, you know, macroporosity, perhaps, you know, so it can have convective transport of gases or whatever, you know, can be areas of application.
I've long been interested in the idea of a metal aerogel, particularly for high surface area electrodes, something where, like a carbon aerogel, combining electrical conductivity with high surface area, which is something that carbon aerogels were sort of the first aerogel materials to offer that combination of properties. So,
yeah.
Although it sounds like, what did you say, 90 square meters per gram?
Yeah, I don't remember if it is 90 or 160. I don't remember exactly.
Somewhere in there for the metal. So actually that's comparable to, you know, 500 or 600 square meters per gram of a silica aerogel, keeping in mind that iron is going to be heavier than...
It's heavier, you know,
than the
backbone, you know, it's much heavier than silica.
By mole, if we think of compare the surface area, it's probably a reasonably high surface area for what it is, but extremely exciting. Really cool stuff, and we're going to put a special up on aerogel.org. How many people are in your research group?
It fluctuates between 2 and 4.
2 to 4?
2 to 4, yeah.
So actually a relatively small group.
Yeah, small group, yeah.
So you must be very directly involved in driving the innovation.
I have like a management style, if you wish, you know, in which like I interact with them continuously. Even when I'm out of town, you know, I want to know what's happening in the lab, but I'm not there to answer questions, you see.
Uh-huh.
Like every little detail. So people, they just take initiative and good results just start coming.
Excellent.
Yeah.
But where do you get your ideas from? You've single-handedly revolutionized two big problems in the aerogel community, the fragility of aerogels and now metal aerogels, a whole new class of materials. Those are two holy grail problems that a lot of people worked on for a long time and there was no good solutions. And what's so special about Nick Leventis in your thought process? You're able to
absolutely consult. Nothing special, you know, just like the cross-linked aerogels actually came out of an observation that we're making silica gels and polyurethane gels, and they look like indistinguishable the one from the other. So we thought, you know, to make like the the one network inside the other. But then when we did that, we figured out that there was some interaction between the two materials. So we use some basic chemistry to figure out what that interaction is, and the rest is history, you know. So we start building, you know, like polyurethane and polyurea, you know, conformally on the backbones. And then all of a sudden, the student who made it came over in the lab and says, you know, we cannot break this thing. Like,
so what a problem.
We have this
That's
little,
amazing.
This little piece of aerosol, you know, just passing around from one hand to the other, and everybody was trying to break it. We could not break it. So we were like, that's something interesting over here. Let's just duplicate it. So I duplicated myself and another student and a third student back in 2002, those things, you know, because, you know, you had to keep them working independently to make sure that what it was not like the one was influencing the other. So, yeah, that's how the thing came up.
What did you feel like when you saw that first X-Aerogel?
We were excited. Yeah. Really excited, you know.
I can definitely imagine. Nicholas Leventis, one of the reinventors of Aerogel. Nick, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Steve.